Namaste. So today's reflection, we have a subject which, more than a subject, it's both a subject and a process, the intelligent will. So all yoga is a turning of our nature towards the divine. Now, how do we do it? What is that part in nature which we will use to turn it toward the divine? Now, when we take a close look at our nature, we see that there are two kinds of elements within us. Elements which are helpful to the yogic process and elements which are like a hindrance to the yogic process. Now, hindrance doesn't mean that they are bad elements. They may be ready to be transformed at some point of time, but they don't offer help at this point of time. Now, what people do, they start fighting with the obstacles. This is just the wrong approach to do. The first thing is to use the helpful elements of nature and step out of the magic circle of ignorance in which we are trapped. Now, we have three main powers within us, or four main powers, or three main powers with one which is behind, as help in this process. Within this circle itself we have. So people often ask that, you know, we don't have even enough food for two square meals. How are we going to practice yoga? So he asked them, that is yoga practiced by food? Yoga is a different thing. There are people, great beings like Surdas had not even leave aside food. They didn't have eyes. Can we imagine how he was practicing yoga? We have so many examples. Mirabai is outcast from a palace. Sudama, we have number of examples of people. Kabir, who had nothing inside them or outside them, but they, whatever was given to them, they made use of it for yoga. So there are three powers which are given to us. One is, of course, we know, our intelligence, the intellect. The second is emotions, and the third is will. These are the three things. And behind it is faith. Now you see, the whole magic is because of these. So what is the role of faith? Faith is the man, Sri Aurobindo says. In the Gita it is said that faith is the man. What does it mean? Whatever is my faith, in that direction everything will begin. It is a switch, master switch, the main switch. So if there is the faith in the background that life is miserable, it will remain miserable. So our thoughts, our feelings, our will end up in that direction. If our faith is in a very limited thing, like, you know, I want this and that, then our entire nature will run in that direction. But if my faith is in the fact that at my core I am divine and can become one with the divine, then everything in nature will begin to move in that direction. That's why faith is the most important fundamental necessity of yoga. Then there are emotions, will, not so easy to turn unless one is very endowed. Because emotions, there are two aspects of emotions, the surface emotions and the deeper emotions. Deeper emotions, we are not even aware. We are aware only of surface emotions. But when we go within, we become aware of a deeper heart. Sri Aurobindo speaks of that, which is rather easier to turn toward the divine. But the surface emotions are very turbid, very, you know, difficult. Similarly, will, it's not easy because will is drawn out in the form of desires. But there is one part within us which can be taken as a first starting point. It is within nature, but nature itself is developing us along those lines, where this first part is like the leader of the entire nature. If we can allow it to take the lead, then the rest can follow suit. So what is that part within nature which is developing? If we look at the evolutionary process, it is very clearly the intellect of man. This is how the intelligence, the mental intelligence, it has come. And this intelligence is something which can be effectively taken out. It can help us take the whole nature forward and higher. So the whole trick lies in first extricating this intelligence. If we can do it, then other parts of nature will be compelled to follow. And Shobindu speaks of this even in synthesis when he describes the yoga of divine self-perfection, that the first thing that should be done is to let the intelligent will turn in the direction, it can be in two directions, upward and inward, or outward and downward. Generally in most human beings, it is turned outward and downward. What is meant by that is, outward means all the surface activities, surface phenomena. If you see people, one of the famous pastimes is gossip. So what is this gossip about? All surface things, all that is happening outside, newspapers, television reports, everything. It's basically surface life of man. Even in our jobs, we are concentrated with the surface events. Or downwards. Downwards means what am I going to get out of it? Power, position, money, selfish interest. So when this intelligence is in man is absorbed in many outer activities for their own sake, surface interest, and turned downwards to fulfill its own petty interest, then it becomes bound. It doesn't allow us to be free. Then what this intelligence does, it is at the mercy of our emotions. It is at the mercy of our desires. And the typical state is whatever we do, because it is there still as the leader, but it is at the mercy of all these parts. So in human beings, there is a tendency to refer everything to this intelligence. It's there in human beings. Animals never feel the need to justify anything. When a tiger pounces and eats, and you ask the tiger, well, did you do a right thing or a wrong thing? Tiger will say, look, I am not hungry, otherwise I would have eaten you. That's my only logic. Tiger will not get into this. That's why Shobindu says there is there is divinity in it, because there is a spontaneous something in the tiger. But, and there is a spontaneity of the gods. But in between, human beings have this need to find some kind of justification or cause. Even a terrorist who is killing people blindly in a merciless way. Sorry. Ask him, why are you doing it? He will quote this reason, that reason. Why? Because it is completely at the mercy of reason. Reason, intelligent will is more than reason, but reason is something we still understand. It is at the mercy of all the lower elements. First thing is to learn to separate it from the field of nature. So how to do it? By turning it upward and inward. So how do we turn it upward and inward? Method is very simple. Let the thoughts be concentrated on the eternal. So in the whole day, we have so many things going on. In between, we get time. So we should turn it to the eternal. So it means that when we have to, let's say a whole day, we have to make a priority. Dainandini, other day, you know, we're discussing. So what is our priority? Many things will be there in the day, but the priority should be eternal. The divine, that which is permanent. Priority should not be the temporary things. And then we should take out moments when we step back and look at life, look at everything that is happening in our life. Many things will happen because nature is like that, complex movement. And instead of justifying any activity, because the mind can justify in 100 ways and the vital can deceive in 1,000 ways. So for every little justification of the mind, the vital can give a counter. So look at it, step back and see in every activity. Now this is something very interesting. The first step is where we see whether this activity is important from the eternal point of view or not important. First step, schooling, higher secondary, unimportant, leave it aside. So ultimately we do those activities which are important for the discovery of the eternal within us. That's why we see that, you know, in the ashram context, it's ashram work. So we do that. So we do it because this work is meant for, or an activity which in some way helps the mother's work. So we do that, and for the rest of the activities, we do only that much which is needed for the maintenance of the bodily life, which means food and everything, even that is provided in the ashram. But this is step one, like the Kena Upanishad. The second is stage two, when we have navigated through this stage. It is in everything, there is an eternal element and there is a temporary element, because the divine is everywhere. So we have to disengage the temporary and the transient from that which is permanent and the eternal. In every work, what is the temporary element? The money I will get, the position, the people will take my name, fame, insults, jeers, praises. This is the temporary element. So do we discard the work? No. But the same work, there is the divine element, the eternal element, the permanent element. So we do that work as an offering. So same, nothing has changed outwardly, but the entire motive has changed. So we are, the mind and thoughts are turned toward the permanent. We have so many examples of it. As the mother says, when you receive gifts, when you give gifts, Shubhendu speaks of it. We can live in the transient and the temporary, that it is coming from an individual to me, and when we give, I am giving to X and Y and Z. We have lost it. But when we live with the consciousness, it is the divine who is giving, and to the divine we are giving, then even if the person refuses, supposing you give with a very good consciousness, that this idea that you are giving it to the divine, and the person looks at it and says, oh, this you have given, what is its value? And discards it. Still, you have gathered a pearl of permanence because you had given it to the divine. Then work this, we can enter into the field of relationship. What does the mother say? She speaks about love very beautifully. She says the mighty vibration coming from the one and going to the one. So what is happening in between? In between is the temporary and the transient. All the kinds of things which are gathered around because of the lower nature, imperfect nature, they will come in. Now one way is, if we are in the pre-higher secondary, withdraw from all other love and love only the divine. And that divine is other than this. You see, Kena Upanishad. So we have to see where we stand. So focus on the divine. Then the next step is where in everything we love the divine element. Mother says very beautifully, who is our best friend? You know, we casually say friend, friend, friend. She says the best friend is he who loves us in our best part. And yet does not compel us to be otherwise, other than what we are. So then she describes this very beautifully. It's a very nice, lovely description. I think it is volume 9, Best Friend. If you Google search, you'll find it. So she describes that many lives have been spoiled. Promising people. Why? Because they had friendship with those fellows who will just encourage all kind of things. Low things, basal things. And so people go with it. And whereas, who is the best friend? Best friend is not somebody with whom one can have fun. Normally we think friend, oh, let's go, let's have a party. So friends are who? With whom we can have fun. We must know the difference. It's not that we don't have fun. But we must understand that this is not our best friend. Best friend is that person who ends up at some point or the other in time of igniting, helping us in our best part. What about those parts which are very weak, imperfect? Leaves us. He doesn't put a pressure because he knows they are going through an evolutionary process. It cannot be otherwise. So she describes it in great detail. And of course then she says, it's not divine the best friend. So then we don't really need outwardly any friend. But yes, the whole world is a friend and everybody one can love. But always with this eye on the eternal. The moment we put anything, again money, we have money, people have all kinds of money. We can deal with it outwardly and downwardly. Downwardly, when we just use money to multiply money through share markets. Mother speaks of that, that you should never use money to multiply money. It's not a very good thing to do. Because it's creating a false world of speculation. You see, you are entering into a world where you are artificially blowing up something. And it leads to holes at other places. Something is multiplying at the cost of something else. So this is where money is being used for very transient, temporary purposes, or it is being used to satisfy my own desires or some other person's desire. But then there is another use of money where it is turned upward and inward, turned toward the eternal. So how do we use it? Using the money for divine purposes, to create beauty. It's not that one has to lead an ascetic life, not at all. Divine does not want it. But to create beauty, to use it for higher purposes, even sometimes as offering to things, you know, which are helping in the divine work or divine manifestation. And then, of course, when every time we buy a book and, you know, which is going to uplift us. So all this is a divine use of money. So this turning the intellect inward and upward is not about some activity, doing some activity and not doing some other activity. Same with walk, same with exercise. And how beautifully mother put it, that after many years of people doing exercise in the playground, many years, almost 20 years, I think it was 1969 when she gave the prayer of the cells of the body. She says that finally they have understood. So they have asked me, why do we do the exercises? Up till now it was to build the body, to look good, to be healthy, to lead a long life, none of this. So she says to bring consciousness into the body and to open the cells to the divine influence. Same thing, exactly the same thing. So the intellect is the leader of the march and it should be turned inward and upward. Same with the subject. We are studying a subject. It can be art or science. So what is the outward approach? We learn a technique. Or if, let's say, in a field of medicine or engineering, we know all the outer details. We are information gatherers, data processing. And data processing, and we have mastered it. Now we are using this to publish articles, all kinds of things to further our career. This is outward and downward. But the same subject, we can try to understand how really things work. I mean, I can give an example of the field of psychiatry. How is the mind, how does the mind come into existence? Is the mind the result of neuronal activity? Or is the mind independent of the neurons? Now this fundamental question will change our entire outlook. If it is the result of neuronal activity, then all our mental thought processes, yoga, everything collapses. But if consciousness is primary and mind and brain are its result, then the whole thing changes. Now same thing we are studying. We have phenomena of, you know, in psychiatry, or for instance, when people develop illnesses, now we have these illnesses going around. So what really is a pandemic? So outward activities, oh, they have studied, they have seen the virus, and you know, it's this, that is the diagram. Everywhere you are seeing now this virus all around. But what is behind the virus? How come suddenly it has exploded? Oh, we know it all. Chinese Wuhan lab. Now go deeper. Chinese Wuhan lab, what is it behind it? There is a state of consciousness which is monstrous. What is that state of consciousness? It wants to create a hegemony over the world and it's ready to go to any extent of devious designs to finish this world under its single reign. Then you remember there is a line in Savitri where Sri Aurobindo speaks in Descent into Night. In a giant studio of creative death, the sons of darkness sit and plan. Giant studio of creative death. What are the ways and means that we can destroy humanity? Now when you go deeper and deeper, then you see virus is a very small symptom. You can, you know, cure it. But the deeper malady, it is not even China, it's not even Wuhan. What is the real problem? It is this state within man which wants to aggressively create hegemony over the world. It wants to build empires. It wants to conquer dominions and unjustly, you know, amass things, expand its empire. Now when we look at it like that, then we will see that there is something in us which corresponds to that. That's why when, you know, all this Taliban thing was going on, even now it... So how can we help the process? We can discover the little Talibani inside us. Do we not have a little Talibani inside us? That is the extreme expression. That is the symptom, the ultimate malady. It is manifesting in a group of cells. If we take human beings at the cell of the body, it is manifesting in a group of cells which are already prone to disease. But the problem is in something deep within human consciousness. And that is where we can work. So with everything, even in a virus, and then we go further and study that how is this virus spreading, then we'll discover it is fear, ill will. So everything can be a field of study where we go inward and upward. Look behind, look behind, look at the ultimate cause, deeper cause, deeper cause, deeper cause. And we can study it outwardly and downwardly. So with all the fields of activity and interest, the intellect or the intelligent will has to disengage itself from emotions, from will. We have to stop justifying. We have to look at it as a witness that whatever is happening. So, you know, when people like anger, there are two kinds of states. In the first stages, people say, it's natural. I mean, I get angry because then they say, because so-and-so said something, so my anger is natural. Then the third step is when they begin to see that regardless of anything, it's me who is responsible. You know, when freedom begins when we don't hold anybody else responsible for what's happening in our life. When we don't complain that it is because of so-and-so person, we take it that whatever is happening in my life, me and only me is squarely responsible for it. And then the real journey begins. So that only the intelligent will which has come out can see. And it can see. It doesn't matter what the other person did or did not do. It's irrelevant to you. But my autonomy is that I still can master. So this intelligent will has to turn inward and outward. And there are so many examples. And when it does it, it withdraws from the sensory field, goes deeper and deeper into not the appearances, but deeper and deeper. You see this example which is given in the Gita, like a tortoise, it withdraws inside itself. This is half the example. What it means is that sensory activities means appearances. So appearances are somebody is very charming, somebody is very good looking, somebody is very brilliant, talks very nicely. Somebody is very generous. Look at Karna's life. Very generous fellow. Somebody is very skilled. Fantastic archer. This is called being engaged only at the sensory level. Go deeper. That's what I was discussing this with someone, that what is the difference between Karna and Arjuna? Both are wonderful archers. Nobody can say who is greater. But the difference lies inwardly. For Karna, the core is ambition. Even when he gives, oh, Karna is known for giving. Fantastic. So God says, okay, I'm going to use this. He's known for giving. But for Arjuna, inner state, he puts all his skills at the service of the divine, surrenders. This is my skill, use it. Tell me where is the target. So divine says, that is the target. Oh, they are my loved ones. It doesn't matter. That's your target. You ask me the target, here is the target. He says, okay. As you say, so I'll act. What about Karna? Karna is also told by Shri Krishna that you are in the wrong camp and the wrong targets. He says, doesn't matter. I will listen to what Duryodhana says. This is the difference. Everything is the same. But at one place, you decide based, your decisions are based on this person, that person. But in another one, the decision is based on what is the true thing to do, what is the right thing to do. This only the intelligent will can tell us. And this true thing and right thing is not just about outward activity. It is the attitude, state in which one can enter. Supposing one has slipped into darkness, what is the true and right thing to do? Enter into light, come out into light. Now, very easy. But you are there. So what do you do that? Okay, I invoke the sun here. Because the sun is hidden here. Now you see, when you have that attitude, the sun will come right into even that abyss. Mother and Shivindu, so many prayers are there to that extent. Wherever we are, in whatever state. So the intelligent will must always be First thing is to disengage it from surface activities, turn it towards a seeking for the divine, for the eternal, turn it upwards towards higher things, so that we may develop a deeper vision to look at life, our own life, world around, understand the deeper play, not to act just because everybody is doing the same thing, but to become more conscious. Intelligent will teach us to be more conscious. One of the first things, you know, when I was a little young child and this was like, you know, you have to bow down before elders, I said, why should I touch their feet? No, because they are elders. So? No, because they have to be respected because they are elders. Why should we respect somebody because he is elder to me in age? Isn't it? Why should we respect just because somebody is elder to me in age? We can respect somebody or someone who is really inwardly uplifted and elevated. But just because of age, physical age, just because somebody was born 20 years before me. So, you know, this becoming conscious of everything, what part can make us conscious? The intelligent will. That's why Mother says is the first preparation in yoga. Why are we doing it? We are coming to ashram. Oh, we want to live here. Why you want to live here? Oh, this lovely place. Pondicherry, I like it. Yoga, why are we entering into yoga? She says, do you want powers? Do you want to help others? Is it some kind of ambition to become a guru, this, that? First find out why you want to undertake yoga. Then she says, do you want to consecrate your life to living for the divine? Then. Now all this we can know only when the intelligent will is extricated from the field of nature. Even intelligent will is still nature. But it is that part of nature which can lead us and show us the way. This is the image in the Gita. The senses are the horses. And the lagam, what is it called? People. Reins. The reins are the mind. And who is the person who holds the rein? See the difference. We think mind and buddhi are same. But the buddhi, the discriminating intellect. And who is the traveler? Not the buddhi. Buddhi is still part of nature. The traveler is the rathi. The one who is sitting inside. So, it's a long process. That's why when in the yoga of intelligent will, when Shri Krishna is asked by Arjuna, he says, you are saying all this very nice when I'm hearing. But it's very difficult. How am I to do it? Even the mind, then Shri Krishna says, even the mind of the sages, it's very difficult. You see, Durvasa Rishi, why Durvasa? Gautam Rishi, suddenly in a moment, what did he do? He cursed his wife. I mean, you can't imagine. So he says, Shri Krishna says, it's very difficult. But he tells two very interesting cues. First he says, it is very difficult, Arjuna, but even if you do a little of it, svalpamasya dharmasya, it will free you from great fear. So first step is, practice it. Nobody expects that everything can be done in one day or in one moment. But even a little of this practice will liberate us from fear. Why? Because fear is born out of attachment. Intelligent will extricates us out of that. All fear is out of attachment. Attachment to life, this bodily existence brings fear of disease and death. Attachment to a human being brings fear of losing the person. Attachment to an intellectual idea brings, all kinds of things where plagiarism, this, that, somehow pushing ambition, all this is born out of attachment. So, to segregate the two. So, even a little practice of it in whatever field is a gain. And the second thing he says, it is difficult. Therefore, he gives us the ultimate clue. And that clue is that sitting quietly with your mind withdrawn from all this, spend some time concentrating upon me. First, the buddhi draws all this inwardly and outward, then on me. Now, this me is a big thing. The divine who has become human. So on Shri Krishna, those who want to follow Shri Krishna, those who want to follow Christ, Lord Rama, intelligent will applies everywhere. And for us, Shobindu and the mother. So this mind withdraws from the outer appearances and turns toward the mother and Shobindu. One can concentrate upward this intelligent will or concentrate within, and it will become the leader of the path. And when it concentrates within, it is literally the image of Krishna and Arjuna. What is the image? Look at Arjuna. Arjuna is representative of buddhi. Arjuna is the Rathi. So he is, you know, he is bewildered. And he asks Sri Krishna. So this turning towards the eternal, it can be bewildered. And then we turn our minds to the eternal and the eternal will guide us. He is the master, he is the leader. But if you think that my mind is self-sufficient in the intellect, in our intellectual understanding, then it will lead us astray. So always to turn toward the intellect, toward the eternal, to turn toward the divine, spend some time in turning upward and inward, either concentrated within, inside the heart or above the head. These are the things which, and concentrated upon the divine. So these are the things which ultimately will liberate the intellect. When the mind of man is, and that's why Sri Aurobindo says something very interesting with which we can close in the synthesis of yoga. He says the eternal Veda is secret within the heart of every living conscious creature. Veda is not a book. Book is only an expression of what is inside. So how are we to read the Vedas? So he says, gives a clue. And Sri Aurobindo gives a clue. This eternal Veda reveals itself little by little, swiftly or slowly, as the mind of man turns away from the transient things towards the eternal. All that is required is that. Then the same Veda, the same, even the outer Veda, everything in life will begin to reveal a new meaning. And if it is not turned toward the eternal, then we will see, oh, this, why this happened in my life? Why has the divine does this to me? Because he's the poor fellow, he's the ultimate dump basket category. So when we are unhappy with life, oh, why he has done this to me? Why mother has done this to me? As if mother has no other work except to do, put us in trouble. But instead, what should be your approach? Mother, I don't understand why this is happening in my life. Reveal to me why, what is the wisdom behind it, and she will reveal. So the mind of man, enamored of the eternal, it must really feel ki this is worth pursuing. How to reach that state, that also Sri Aurobindo describes. How to become enamored of the eternal? In some, it happens naturally because they are prepared from past life. In others, it happens in one of the few ways, but two ways which Sri Aurobindo speaks is, one is when they read a book which speaks of the eternal. That is the purpose of much of this swadhyaya, satsang. Because by reading it one day, initially we are reading word meaning, what is meant. One day we will say, all this is fine. But who has written it? Oh, Life Divine is a wonderful book. Imagine the wonderful author. Life Divine is wonderful. What about the author? Sri Krishna's flute is wonderful. But what about Sri Krishna? Whose flute can enchant the whole creation? Who is he? One day we begin to love him. Because it starts from here. Reading his book every day. Initially we are thinking our mind should understand. Next step is I can give lectures. And Divine says, okay. Expressed, give lectures, read, try, understand, write commentaries, all this. One day we say, all this is fine. But who are you? Who has brought out such a wonderful book and many others which have come out of you? Then we say, I want to know your heart. Then we discover the seer behind the book. Seer, deep-hearted, occult, fount of love. Vast in thy heart was a tide, washing the coasts of heaven. White star scripts of the gods born from the presses of light. He has gone for us all the way to Cheet Sagar to bring water. Born from the presses of light. It's a pure ocean of milk, of light. And he brings it because you can't bring down that light easily. And put it in words. Born from the presses of light. Thoughts broke burning and bare crossing the human night. White star scripts of the gods born from the presses of light, page by page to the dim children of earth were given. So this is one way. And the second he says is, when we follow the example of somebody who is walking the path. So these are the two ways that slowly at some point you will realize that it's not the person or the book. Shabd Brahmati Vartate. It is he who is the author who is drawing us through this book, because we cannot hear his silence. He has given us his speech. But a time comes when the speech and the book, but not prematurely, a time comes when the speech and the book become a means to enter into his consciousness. And then the mind, when it enters into the consciousness of the divine, everything in creation becomes a Veda. And it becomes, all discloses the unseen beloved. Everything is a grand discloser of the secret knowledge, the secret love, the grace, the wonderful peace. And then we can say literally, the mind cries out an immortal litany that, behold thy wonderful presence in each and everything, in each event and circumstances of my life, thou alone art present. But this is the process. First thing is for the intellect to disengage. It cannot happen in one day. Several times it will be carried away to learn to disengage. 10,000 times, that's what Shri Krishna says, the mind will be back into that mode. Bring it back. It will become easy. Each time we do it, it will become easy, easy, easy. And finally one day, it will be a pain to be brought out because it's so much dwelling in the eternal. And then one day, in everything outward and inner, it will discover the one divine. So this is the journey of the, and the first thing, as I said, the yoga of the intelligent will, eventually reaching its culmination. And the will itself, because what the mind is enamored with, that is what the will draw in that direction. If I am truly wanting the divine in my life, why would I invest my energies in just amassing wealth for the sake of enjoying? Why would I do it? Then I'll just want that much money which takes care of, you know, my everyday. Sai itna dijiye, tame kut, jame kutum samaye, mai bhi bhuka na rahu, sadhana bhuka jaye. Oh Lord, give me that much that I am well fed and those who come to my house, some guests who are good people, they also are not fed up with me but well fed and go away. The mother gives much, much more. So that we can, without bothering about all these things, we can truly turn toward the eternal, toward the divine. Let our mind turn. Then slowly, the heart and will follow. Bound to, how can one not? When my thought wants that, my heart is bound to one day turn towards that. And when my heart wants that, how can my will just be split up into a life of desires? So this is what is easier way. This is what happens in most people. Of course, the easier is somebody in whom love is awakened. Then that's a different story, a different journey of which we will speak some other time. Thank you.